Meet me at The Chazen. I'm your host, Jennifer Fields. Our new exhibit is entitled Insistent Presence, Contemporary African Art from The Chazen Collection, and features four new works selected by guest curator Margaret Nagawa. So how do works of art become part of a permanent collection, and who's responsible for getting them from there to here?
You know, being the collections registrar means I'm in charge of the permanent collection, and as an institution whose mission is to collect and preserve, we are constantly collecting artwork.
Andrea Selbig is the collections registrar of The Chazen. She's responsible for making sure that newly acquired works of art make it from point A to point B, and that's just the beginning.
So it is a process that never ends. The majority of the works that we acquire into the collection are donation offers, so gifts from donors. We do also do some purchases, but really that's quite minimal. I'd even say I'd put that number below 10%.
Really?
Yes, we don't do a whole lot of purchasing. The majority is usually our gifts or bequests. And we also do not accept every gift offered that is offered to us. So there is this constant process of reviewing the gift offers, which really is more in the realm of the curators. And then when we decided to proceed with a particular gift offer, that's when I get involved, and then that's really exactly when the documentation starts, and I start documenting the entire process from those early conversations about the donation through to when it is actually physically delivered to the museum, through to the official accession process by which we sort of officially accept the gift, and then it continues on, because then we create object files and we flesh out the digital object record in our collections database, and then of course that only begins the life of tracking and caring for the work forever, basically.
The exhibit that's happening right now is entitled Insistent Presence, mm-hmm. and there are four pieces that the guest curator, Margaret Nagawa, requested to chase and mm-hmm. purchase. So sort of walk me through what that process is like.
Well,
you can pick a piece, because we've been working a lot with the Emmy Malley piece. I've heard it being put up, but I don't want to. We also talked about the Lebohang piece too, the video.
Okay.
So I'm very interested in, does the materiality of the piece itself, does that change when you're acquiring things? Do certain pieces pose more of I don't want to say a bureaucratic web, but do you have to treat pieces differently based on materiality, or the first step in acquiring the piece is always the same?
So the curator worked with Margaret mostly. So Margaret would make some would propose works for purchasing, and really this was a curatorial decision. Particularly the chief curator, Catherine. But I will say that she would often bring, if she and Amy were interested in pursuing something, then it often gets brought to our curatorial team meetings, where then people like Kate Wanberg, the preparator, and myself could take a look at it, and sort of that's our time to ask the questions and voice any sort of concerns that we might have. So a good example is the Emmy Malley piece, that is the glass tiles. When it was brought up, initially I was copied on an email, and it said 311 glass tiles that hang from a grid from the ceiling. And there's no other explanation. I don't see a photograph. I have no idea. And my instinct was, no, we don't want this. But not because I don't want it, but because my immediate thought is, how are we going to store 311 glass pieces? I had no context. I'm picturing these glass pieces being very large. I'm picturing them being very fragile. The sheer quantity, 311, if they all have to lay on a shelf, I am just thinking this is going to take up a massive amount of cubic footage in our storage space. And again, not that we won't proceed to acquire something, but I think it is my responsibility to remind curators of these sorts of things because then we have to make a decision, is this piece worth taking such a large footprint out of our storage? You know, because that could have potentially been 35 medium-sized sculptures or what have you. In the end, once I received a photograph of it, I was greatly relieved. These glass pieces are very small. They could pack up very small. They don't have to hang up. They literally were shipped to us in a pretty small wooden crate that was no more than like 3 feet by 2 feet. So in the end, I was completely relieved, and I was happy that we could acquire the piece.
You know what's really funny? The second you started talking about that, I've been having a lot of friends, conversation with friends as we get older. Like, what do you do with your parents' stuff? What do you do with your stuff? What if you're combining households? And the first thing I thought was, that couch is not going to go in this room. You know, this sort of that idea, a very practical way that you have to think about these pieces. Mm-hmm. We, on this end, are just absolutely delighted. And we can revel in the beauty of it, mm-hmm. where you have to actually think about it as a functional. You have to take all that out of it and just think of it as the object. What am I going to do with this thing?
Yes, absolutely. A big part of my role, like it or not, is to play devil's advocate, is to look at things critically. You could say it's almost a negative eye. It's, you know, I'm always the one that's saying yes, but, or have you thought about this? So that it can come off as if I'm trying to, you know, be contrarian. I'm not. It's just that people aren't thinking about the practicalities, and it's my job to preserve the piece, so therefore we need to be able to store it, we need to be able to care for it. And if we can't do that responsibly, should we acquire a piece? And so it's easy to look at something and think, oh, it's so fabulous, we've got to have it. Well, let's think this through. Will we be good stewards for this piece? Are we the right home?
Can you just follow me around like on a daily basis, and when I'm shopping, and be like, are you going to be a good steward of this? And do you have a place for this? Because it's just, you know, when I was thinking about putting together interviews for this, and the fact that the exhibition is called Insistent Presence, that reads so much into it. Because it has a life so much broader than what we are going to see in that exhibit. And whether or not it remains on display or not after the exhibit is gone, there is still this object, this work, that has a presence that has to be honored and cared for.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's true for our entire collection of 24,000 plus works. It's cumulative. And so the more we collect, the bigger the responsibility. So you have to think carefully. You know, this museum is 53 years old now, and early on, when museums are starting, you've got all of this space and you just want to fill it. And so early curators in the institution, they collected a lot, and it was great at the time. But you know, here we are 53 years later, and we have to think much more carefully about what we're going to acquire.
So then do you work with the academic staff to say, you know, when there's a piece offered, or if they're looking at something in particular to add to the collection for educational purposes?
Mm-hmm. Occasionally. There have been points in our history where we had adjunct curators on the art history staff. So we worked quite closely with Professor Henry Druhl from the art history department, and he often would recommend different works for us to acquire, whether it's by gift or through purchasing. And as the resident expert on African art, we absolutely, you know, we usually took his recommendations. And we have a wonderful gallery, you know, full, that I would say Henry Druhl, in a sense, you know, helped us curate and build that collection. Other times we might have something offered to us. If our curators on staff don't have an expertise, we'll go to an expert on campus. Whether it's an art history professor, or classics, or otherwise, we can help them with research. We definitely are interested to see what they have to say. There have been times that someone could look at something because they've looked at a million ancient pots or what have you and be able to say, I don't think this looks authentic, or not that it's a fake, but just not exactly what we would need for our collection, or it just might be something that, oh, these sorts of works are a dime a dozen, I'm not so sure we need to acquire this. But also then help us steer towards maybe the kind of works we should be looking for. So they might be able to help us identify gaps, and then our curatorial staff can go out and, you know, make note of that and maybe try to look for those sorts of things if we feel like it's something that we need to pursue. But, you know, we're always going to need to balance the museum's needs and how we can care for something with maybe the academic needs. But we definitely are wanting, we are a teaching collection, so we definitely are going to want input from the academic staff.
Andrea, we talked about the museum being 52, 53 years old. You've been here for 23 years. Yes. But talk to me about the first things you remember being a part of acquiring for the museum. I don't know that I would be able to contain myself. I think that I would be so giddy and so excited about it that I don't know that I would be able to contain myself and be as organized as you have to be to bring something from whether it's down the street or across the world to the museum, then Elvium. So talk to me about that process and that first taste of I've made it. This is what I'm doing.
that's a good one. I generally don't remember exactly the first thing that I was responsible for acquiring from the get-go, but I do recall acquiring a, it is a drinking vessel, it's ancient, it's in the shape of a bull, and I believe that was one of these purchases that are sort of rare, but we purchased it at auction from London, I believe, and everything about that to me was super exciting. A, it's international shipment. I believe it was from one of the larger auction houses, Sotheby's or Christie's. And just the idea of I'm working with Sotheby's or Christie's in London and helping to arrange the shipment of something that is ancient was just really exciting for me. That to me felt like, oh my goodness, I'm an actual museum professional. Also very nervous, of course, just the idea that this is a completely irreplaceable, you know, object. You know, it was an ancient vessel, and it's really cool. We even had to figure out, well, how are we going to display this? It's not a typical mug. You couldn't just set it down. It's the shape is like a bull's head with horns on it. So we ended up having to get a special mount made for it. It wasn't something that I had to do, but, you know, I had to work with the preparators to have it fabricated, and it was just all really, really exciting at the time. And I would say that was in the first couple of years, maybe the first year that I was here.
So I've watched you, and I have tape of you, when things are being unpacked and packed up. What's going through your head? What are you looking for? Because I'm telling you, I went downstairs when they were hanging the Emmy Malley piece, and Catherine, and I was like, isn't that a delightful sound? And she's like, it's making me nervous, because you can hear it clinking. Yes. What's happening for you, especially with something that is as delicate, it presents to me as delicate as the Emmy Malley piece. Mm-hmm. What's happening for you in those moments? At what point does your responsibility ever end? When does your responsibility for peace start, and does it ever end?
Well, in a sense, it starts the minute we pick it up. So I make the shipping arrangements, and I'm contracting out with fine art shippers. There are customs brokers. There are these logistics companies all around the world. And a lot of it is just a matter of some emails. However, we technically are responsible for it from the minute it's picked up. So it's door to door, basically. I think insurance companies call it nail to nail. So the minute it's taken off the wall in one place and put on the wall in another place, that's when the University of Wisconsin or the Chazen Museum of Art is technically responsible for it. So there are decisions that need to be made, and yeah, I've been doing this a long time. You grow, it's not that I've grown numb to it, but it's not as shocking or nerve-wracking anymore. And sometimes I forget myself and I just think, wow, you know, I just had to make this decision, you know, about how we're going to ship something. Do we want it in a private container? Do we want it in a shared container? Is this going to be in a climate controlled crate? Is it going to, am I going to include a tip and tell monitor inside of the crate? All of these various decisions that you factor into it, all of which, of course, cost money. So you're balancing how much this is going to cost between the safety of the object, and you do a lot of risk analysis in your head, and you do it enough, like any other profession, you can start making these decisions really quickly and easily without much, you know, no sweat on my end, basically. Which isn't to say that I don't. There's always some new situation that comes up where I might have to do a little research. I might need to contact colleagues, or maybe we contact a conservator to ask their opinion on something. But thankfully, a lot of these companies that I mentioned, these fine art shippers, they also, this is their job, so they know what they're doing. And so a lot of times it makes my job that much easier, because they know what they're doing as well, and I trust them because I have no other choice than to be able to trust them. You know, unless I'm going out, you know, all over the world picking things up whenever we have something.
Which wouldn't be a bad gig either.
Not a bad gig, but it's not going to happen. So you have to learn to trust.
When does this object start to breathe life for you? Because you see it small, mm-hmm. like with the Emmy Mallet, you saw it small and you didn't know how big it was or how small it was or how fragile it was. Talk to me about when you can actually delight in the work, when you can step back and go, oh my God, I love this, or I didn't think it would look that way. When does it start to breathe through you and sort of take on this life on the other side of this long journey that it takes to get here?
Mm-hmm. So I think for me, I tend to look at the object very critically for much of this object's life. So right from the get-go, at the very idea of perhaps working with this object, I am starting to assess things like, how difficult is this going to be to store? What sort of storage space will this take? What kind of care will this take? Do I need to make a special mount for this? Are there going to be light restrictions? I'm immediately thinking of all of these sorts of things that could go wrong, because I need to think in terms of preservation, of preserving this piece. So in a sense, this object in a way sort of becomes this patient, and I am diagnosing the potential problems are and how I can mitigate perhaps the problems, if there are any. It's great when I decide, hey, this object, I don't really, there are no red flags, I don't see any potential problems. But until the object actually gets to me and it has been unpacked and it is finally on view, I am still the entire process going to be looking at everything critically. Even if there weren't any red flags in the beginning, well, now I have to ship this piece, whether it's across the country, from overseas somewhere, during which time it is at high risk of some sort of damage or loss happening. Even when it arrives at the museum, it's still in its crate. I still don't really know what's happened inside that crate. I know what I expect to find when we unpack it, but I won't really see it until we do unpack it. We unpack it very slowly. I am going to be looking at it with, I'm looking for problems. Basically, I'm looking for any losses, abrasions. Is there a loose part? When I moved it out of it, did I hear a little rattle? Did something break? Did it not? You know, we were very careful when we remove something from a crate or a package. And not until it is actually on the table and I have looked it over closely for damage, for condition issues, can I really step back and then actually look at it as an artwork? Because up until that point, this is sort of like a charge under my mm-hmm. care. And I'm not really viewing it as an artwork until I can feel like, okay, it's here, it's undamaged, now I can really enjoy it. And the you know, the better part is if it goes directly into an exhibition or on display. Because not until that point, you know, and that then it's got the context around it. It has more room to breathe. It's on a pedestal. It's not in dark storage. It's got beautiful light. And at that point is usually when I can really sit back and enjoy it.
But then at some point, Andrea, it may go back into storage and you have to say goodbye to it in a way again. Do you ever miss things? Are there things in storage that you're just like, oh man, that needs to be up in the gallery? Or I would really love to hang out with that piece again. Do you miss things when they're taking off display or off exhibition?
There are certain pieces that I wish would remain on display, but I am incredibly lucky with my job, and if I miss something, I can just go to storage and go have a visit.
And take me with you.
Right.
You've been listening to Meet Me at the Chazen. Our guest, Andrea Selbig, is a collections registrar at UW-Madison's Chazen Museum of Art. Meet Me at the Chazen is a production of the Chazen Museum of Art on the campus of UW-Madison in Madison, Wisconsin. For more information about the museum, its collections and exhibitions, visit chazen.wisc.edu. I'm your host, Jennifer Fields. Thanks for listening.